This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk here on AM 870 WKAR. I'm Jeremy Sampson from WILX TV. In for Earl Robinson today on this day after Christmas, and as we said in the open, we hope that Santa was very good to you yesterday. We've got a pretty busy hour planned for you here. We'll be with you until 2 o'clock. If you want to get involved in today's program, you can certainly do so by dialing us up at 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR if you're in the 517 area code. If you're outside the area, we welcome your phone calls toll-free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR870. We'll also be checking the emails as we go through today's show. And if you'd like to get involved that way, you can email us sportstalk, all one word, at WKAR.org. I'm also a big fan of Twitter, and I tweeted just a few minutes ago that be in today for Earl. If you want to get involved in today's program via Twitter, you can also do that as well. At Jeremy WILX, if you want to get involved in today's program via Twitter. But to begin things, we're going to talk a little Michigan State football, and we're going to head out west to Phoenix and connect with Lansing State Journal columnist Graham Couch and talk to him a little bit about the green and white. Graham, it's afternoon here, but I'll wish you a very good morning out there in Phoenix.
Same to you. Appreciate it.
How's everything? How was your Christmas out there? A little different, I know, than being home?
Well, actually, you know, several of us who cover the team flew out last night, so got a little bit of time at home, and then flew out of Detroit in the last flight out, and woke up this morning. It's not, you know, I was hoping for like 75 maybe, and just took a walk to the fitness center at this place, and wearing shorts, which may have been a mistake, probably about 50, but still, you know, the difference, it's all relative when you've been in Michigan for a few weeks.
Instead of 75, you get 57, right?
Yeah, right. You know, it's hard to complain right now.
I hear you. As you get ready to kind of head over to practice and see Michigan State today, you know, what are a couple of things that you're looking to kind of hone in on? I mean, one thing that Michigan State's kind of lucky is that they're playing this game on Saturday, so their preparation will be just like it is, you know, throughout the season. So here we are now Wednesday of game week. What are you kind of looking to see when you go over and watch the team today, Graham?
Big thing is, in all bowl games, I always think is which team really wants to be playing the game. Yep. Who's more motivated? Because
sure.
The difference between talent and college football, especially in these second and third tier games, where you know neither team has lit the world on fire all year, you know who wants to be playing here. And you see, you know, the other day you see, you know, an SMU team win an upset. There's a team that wanted to be playing in that game.
Yep.
And much more so than Fresno State. And that's pretty much what that comes down to. And so, you know, and players can say the right things, but sometimes you can get a tone. When I was covering Western Michigan a couple of years ago, they played in the Texas Bowl, which is now a Big Ten Bowl, which is in Houston. And a really first-class operation. You could tell it was moving up as bowl. They played Rice, who's located in Houston. You could tell that whole week through all the events, and there were a lot of big event things, that Rice was just so much more dialed in. Even the team-building exercise things of this rodeo thing, they just killed Western Michigan. And they were organized and they were focused, but they didn't get caught up in the shopping sprees and all that stuff as much. And they wanted to win that football game. And those were two teams that if they played in October at a neutral site would have been a pretty competitive game. And Rice just mopped the floor of them. And so you get that sort of thing. And it's hard to tell, but whichever team is Michigan State honed in, are they, you know, how much do they want to be playing an actual football game on Saturday night?
Well, in talking to the players before they left, I think the biggest thing that they mentioned to us was, you know, wanting to end their season with a winning record. You know, clearly Mark D'Antonio had that little hiccup, you know, what, 3-4 years ago when they lost down in San Antonio and finished that year with a 6-7 record. So I know that they want to avoid that this year, and I think a lot of the players recognize a lot of the momentum that they had coming into this year, even though it didn't work out, but coming off that bowl win from last year. Do you get the same sense?
Well, there is something to it. It is kind of a contradiction. People talk about momentum, and then you look at what happened last year when they had all the momentum in the world, and it led to huge expectations and a lot of bravado,
mm-hmm.
and then didn't pan out. And you know, what I think the lesson in that is ultimately each year is a new year, and you've got to have the personnel. And so the bigger thing, I think, is do you finally see some improvement? Now, they've had, you know, a month to get ready for this game, and all year I kept expecting the big breakout. The one game, I expect two things. I expected the wheels to come off the defense at some point, them just to be tired of it and lose, give up 38, 40 points, and that didn't happen. That's to their credit. But I also thought the offense would really put it together at some point and just have that one game, even if it was not really true to form. And it never happened. And you've had a month to install new wrinkles, to be healthy, to, you know, get younger players more involved, to come up with a more creative offensive game plan. This is kind of, you know, you gotta see some of that, I think. And if you don't, then it's troubling. If you see the same offense at the same level of production that we saw all year, that just doesn't bode well. That's a month to prepare for one game, and that's what you get.
And I'm kind of with you on that, but don't you think that, you know, you mentioned the talent level, and you can change schemes, you can do a lot of those different things, and I think they tried to tweak some things during the year. It's just when you compare this year's offense with last year's offense, the talent level is just not the same. I mean, last year's team had guys, when they touched the ball, who could take it to the house at any time. This year's offense does not have that big play threat. And to me, that's the biggest difference. Defenses can scheme for them because they know it's going to be a methodical drive to go down the field. You don't have that home run hitter with this year's offense.
No question. You don't. I mean, people underestimated exactly how good B.J. Cunningham and Keyshawn Martin were. I mean, those were fantastic players, great college players, and then obviously what Kirk Cousins has done in the NFL, I think, really lends his credence to how good he was at the end of his career. And replacing that's difficult. Not only replace the quarterback, but the wideouts. Often you get one or the other, and you get young wideouts, and you get a veteran quarterback who doesn't look quite as good because the guys aren't in the right places, but he can kind of, you know, will a team through some situations, and eventually they all kind of grow together. When it all happens at once, that's a tough situation. But those receivers ought to grow. There ought to be growth, and there was, you know, there was, I thought, regression on the part of Andrew Maxwell throughout late in the season. And, you know, maybe, you know, Aaron Burbridge got tired, and maybe, you know, people started figuring him out a little bit. He had that big game against Indiana and then kind of tailed off a little bit. But a lot of the guys who are playing now, I mean, they're counting on Andrew Maxwell. I know they've got some other quarterbacks, you know, Damian Terry, everybody's excited to bring him in, and Tyler O'Connor is on the roster. But right now they're counting on Maxwell being the guy next year. And, you know, they're counting on a lot of these wideouts being the guys next year. So you want to see that sort of, but no doubt, talent, if you don't have the horses, you don't have it. But these are a lot of the horses they're going to have next year.
And I think, again, that's why you look at the schedule next year, and the schedule next year becomes a lot easier, especially early on in the season before they get into the meat of the Big Ten schedule. I think, you know, obviously there's going to be some improvement because of, you know, what transpired this year and a lot of the experience that some of these younger players have had to go through. But again, you know, where can you pick up that home run hitter, if you will, you know, the guy that's, you know, going to be able to, you know, like Keyshawn Martin did, who can do multiple things on offense. He can catch the ball down the field, but he can also take the ball in a reverse end around, you know, whatever. You can line him up in the backfield, do different things for him. And it goes back to the old adage of speed kills. And Keyshawn Martin was a guy on kickoff returns, punt returns, whatever, who was lightning fast and had a chance because of his speed to do that. You can't teach speed. You can improve on it, work on it, and try and get a little bit better. But to me, the guys on this roster may have good hands, they may run good routes, but none of those guys have anywhere close to the kind of speed that say a Keyshawn did. And BJ wasn't lightning fast. He was just a great route runner, had great hands, always made the catch, put himself in a good position, and he was a big enough guy he could break a tackle and still take it to the house too. But to me, it's Graham, a lot about the speed and what this team lacks. You know, obviously last year's team had.
Well, and I agree. And I think with the one thing, you don't know when the light's going to go on for a young wideout. You just don't know when that sort of thing is going to happen. You know, a guy like McGarrett Kings, you know, when he's a guy they think has Keyshawn Martin capabilities, and very early on in his career here. And McGarrett and Aaron Burbridge has some big play speed and skill. And, you know, the wideouts can take a while to develop. At some point, the light usually goes on. And I've covered teams where, you know, early in the year they struggle and you get a guy who it just happens for him. Fowler got better. I just don't think Fowler's ceiling is that high. They need a guy whose ceiling is higher to have that light come on. And maybe it happens between this bowl game. You're right. Maybe it doesn't happen until the spring. Maybe it happens 4 weeks into next year. They just need it to happen because it's going to probably be with a lot of these guys that they go to battle with.
Graham Couch, columnist from the Lansing State Journal, joining us for a couple of minutes here on Sports Talk on AM 870. Your colleague Joe Rexroad wrote an article that was in today's paper about Johnny Adams being slowed by a little bit of an injury, a turf toe apparently, and that can be a tough injury for a defensive back to have to go through, especially with a team like TCU that spreads you out and is able to do so many different things offensively. Defensive backs, A, with a team that spreads out, you need a bunch of them to be able to play because you're going to be in a lot of nickel, but you also need them to be at 100% to be able to go and make plays. And if Johnny Adams is not at 100%, that's something that's going to hurt, I think, the Michigan State defense on Saturday.
No question. That's a tough injury. I've never actually had it myself, but I've talked to a lot of players that have, and it's not comfortable even if he's playing through it. I mean, that's really been, Adams and Marquez Denard at times, especially Adams, have taken heat this year. But really, outside of some struggles early on, they've been fantastic corners. You won't find many situations with two better corners in college football. That's a position with Michigan State's defense that they like to leave those guys out on an island. They like to pressure. They like to do a lot of things and rely on those guys to be able to lock it down themselves. If that's not there, it definitely makes a difference.
Oh, a couple more things we'll let you go. A lot of questions are going to be surrounding a couple of key Michigan State players here after this game as to whether or not they're going to take a look at maybe playing at the next level. I want to get your thoughts quickly on Le'Veon Bell, first of all, and what you think might happen with him when the season's over.
I think Bell's got to go. And, you know, first of all, I think people ought to do what they want to do. And if Bell wants to stay and his family doesn't need the money and they want to take out an insurance policy of sorts, I don't know, you know, if he's high enough picked to really get much of one. But, and, you know, he wants to go after Heisman Trophy and a Rose Bowl. That sort of thing is important to him. And he wants to stay in school and he loves the college experience. And the more power to him. I just think that if the NFL is at all important to him, and I'm thinking it is, that he needs to go because it's just 350 more carries on his legs. He's not going to get any faster. I mean, he may lose a little weight or whatever he said he has now and, you know, be a little quicker here or there, but he gained 1,600 yards this year. I mean, that's a heck of a resume year. It's not like gaining 1,800 is going to change your stock, and it's a weak draft class for running back. To me, he's got to go. The others, it's a little more questionable, but even if he was a sixth round pick, I would say unless you can improve your stock dramatically, which I'm not sure he can, you can always get your degree.
Yeah, no question. All right, real quick on Deion Sims, first of all, and then William Golston.
Sims, a lot of people think he's maybe the best pro prospect out of this group, but I also think he can improve his stock by coming back because he's been hurt. He's not always been consistent, but he's a heck of a weapon. He could have an enormous year and, I think be a first-round pick a year from now. And so there's value in that. There is a chance to improve your stock. I also think if he went now, he'd have a good NFL career. So it's really up to where his values are and what he has trusted himself and what he really wants to do. Will Golston, Mel Kiper thinks he should come back. That'll be interesting. Michigan State can only use him back. He had kind of an underwhelming year. But, a ferocious talent. And, I tend to think, that he could gain from another year's worth.
All right, Graham, we've got one caller on the line who has a quick question for you, and then we'll let you go. But let's welcome in Tom, who's in Lansing. Hey, Tom, what's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Actually, I had several, all of them related to things that have been discussed. First question is, I picked up some internet chatter that Reggie Garnett passed away. Have you guys received any confirmation on that?
I had not heard that. I'm not sure, you know, where maybe I'm not sure where you saw that, but I had not seen anything on that.
It was on one of the Spartan websites. They said he passed away this weekend from diabetes. Okay, my second question is, as a follow-up to your guest's comments a moment ago, I saw a mock draft. I believe it was one of the Sports Illustrated writers, and they had William Golston going in the fifth round. And I thought that would, if that in fact is the case, that doesn't seem to be enough of a reason to leave. My final question is, what is Tom Izzo going to do with the Jabari Parker scholarship? Is he going to bring in a guy, or is he just going to bank it? Happy holidays to both of you gentlemen, and I'll take your answer off the air.
All right, Tom, we appreciate the phone call there. Graham, I know you only caught part of that, but a couple of questions he had was about Golston being a fifth-round pick. And, you know, to me, if that's where you're projected, you know, he hasn't – the knock on him has been his consistency. And, you know, without him being as consistent, you know, and if you are – projected to be a fifth rounder, you could very easily go undrafted at that point. So I might come back again for another year, see if you can improve that stock. And the Jabari Parker scholarship, I mean, it's still a little bit up in the air. I know there's a lot of talent coming in next year's recruiting class. And if I were Tom, and I'm not, but if I were, I might just bank that scholarship, Graham, and maybe pick up some extra talent for next year instead of taking a reach.
A couple things. I think he's right on Golston. If you're a fifth-round pick and you can improve your stock and you're a talent, a kind of ferocious physical specimen of that caliber, I would come back and issue that. I would try and put together a big year. I'm not sure on the dynamics or anything with his family situation and what's important to him right now. In terms of what they do with the Jabari Parker scholarship, I think you do wait and see, you know, and obviously Izzo may have other designs, but you wait and see what this team needs. Because keep in mind, other than Derek Nix, this whole squad returns. So if this team is missing one particular piece, say that outside shooter, I've been writing about it a lot, I don't think they have a guy who scares defenses with his shooting. And Russell Bird really hasn't become that, and that's what they're hoping from him. And it does change. One guy like that changes the defense. And I know Gary Harris can hit them, but he doesn't. People are more fear his drive than they do his shot. If you can get that guy, if that's what this team's ultimately missing, what keeps this team from a Final Four in a particular NCAA tournament game or from a Big Ten title, then you go get that guy. Go get a shooter. You go get whatever you're missing. And that's the late signing period is not till May. Michigan State's a desirable program for a lot of people. They're going to know in February or, you know, no later than late March what this team needs. And I'm sure, you know, the thing college coaches will tell you is you never stop recruiting because you never know. You never know who leaves your program. You never know what you'll need. So I'm sure there are a number of kids that Izzo and that staff are on, and they know, they have an idea for what they need. But this is a team that's still gelling and developing, and I think maybe you let it develop and see what it doesn't have.
Graham, we appreciate a couple minutes today. We'll be looking for all your stuff here in the Lansing State Journal here over the next week or so, and hopefully that weather heats up for you guys a little bit out there, and you can have a little fun while you're out there as well.
No complaints. Thanks, Jeremy.
All right, Graham. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Graham Couch, columnist from the Lansing State Journal, joining us here for a couple of minutes on Sports Talk here on AM 870. But we invite you to stay tuned for more Sports Talk after this short break right here on AM 870.
Ken Rudin's grip on political trivia and mind for the minutiae of life in Washington is virtually unmatched. Or so he thought, until fifth grader Gabe Fleischer started his newsletter, Wake Up to Politics. I'm Jennifer Ludden, a political junkie face-off, plus Charles Blow on the meaning of minority. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
All right, that's coming up on Talk of the Nation today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
The winter weather advisory continues until 7 o'clock Thursday morning. A windy day today with snow accumulating perhaps 1 to 2 inches, a high around 30. Snow likely tonight, an accumulation of an inch or less is likely, a low in the lower 20s, and then a mostly cloudy day on Thursday with highs in the upper 20s.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on AM 870 WKAR. Jeremy Sampson from WILX-TV. And for Earl Robinson today, we'll be here until 2 o'clock talking sports with you. We'll be open line until 2 p.m. We just talked with Graham Couch, who's out in Arizona following the Michigan State football team as they get ready for that Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl against TCU coming up late Saturday night. That's a 10:15 kickoff. So you'll have to get a little nap in the afternoon if you want to stay up and watch that one. We'd love to hear from you today, and you can do so and join us on today's program by dialing 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR. Or if you're outside the 517 area code, you can reach us toll-free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. Aaron's on the other side of the glass, and he'll be taking your phone calls this afternoon as we are with you here for another 35 minutes or so. Along with Michigan State out at their bowl game, the Michigan Wolverines, who play on New Year's Day in Tampa, actually left earlier than Michigan State did to get out to their bowl game. The Wolverines flew out earlier this week, and they spent a couple days in Clearwater before moving on to Tampa last night as they get ready to face South Carolina in the Outback Bowl. But today the weather is, well, it's wreaking some havoc on those in Florida. Nice big storm has blown through the area and forced the Michigan football team inside. They were outside going through some workouts and at a local high school, and a big storm came in, some lightning and thunder, and the Wolverines going through their first practice now inside, having to do so in a high school gymnasium, which is not ideal if you ask any football coach. But when you're on the road at these bowl games and the inclement weather comes in and you're supposed to be outside practicing, it's not like their facilities back at home where they can just go inside the indoor facility and they would be all set. They were out at Jesuit High School, and so they were forced inside, just hanging out in the gym there as they get ready again to face South Carolina. So that's one of the things when you're at these bowl games is you kind of have to, you know, go with the flow a little bit because, you know, you're scheduled to usually practice at some kind of high school facility. And a lot of times fields aren't ready or different things aren't as you are accustomed to with your own practice field and practice facilities back at home. So that's one of the things that Michigan will have to get ironed out as they get ready to face South Carolina. There is one bowl game tonight, and there's a little bit of local interest. It's the Little Caesars Pizza Bowl taking place tonight down in Detroit. Western Kentucky facing Central Michigan, a 7:30 kick, and that, of course, will be on ESPN. I know that the Little Caesars Bowl, formerly the Motor City Bowl, is looking to move up the Big Ten pecking order a little bit in the future. And if it weren't for Ohio State and Penn State not being able to play in a bowl game this year, certainly the Little Caesars Bowl would have had a Big Ten team facing off against a MAC opponent, of course, Central Michigan this year. And you have to give some credit to Dan Enos and the Chippewas. They were able to win their last three games and get eligible for a bowl game for the first time in the Enos era. And as everybody knows, they've struggled in his first 3 years, but 6-6 finished this year, and that, of course, gets them in. Western Kentucky is playing in a bowl game for the first time since becoming a top-tier college football school in 2009. Of course, Western Kentucky has been in the news lately because they have just hired Bobby Petrino to take over their football program, and Petrino is going to come back to coaching after less than a year of an absence. Of course, he was the Arkansas head coach and was dismissed after his indiscretions there with that football program. And Petrino's coming back, and this is one last chance for the Western Kentucky players and coaches to kind of get another win in their season. They come in at 7-5 before Petrino takes over. But really for Central Michigan, It's been an up and down season for them. Obviously, the best one that Dan Enos has had in Mount Pleasant. He's been able to resurrect that program a little bit. You know, it was so strong there under Brian Kelly and Butch Jones, and of course they had Dan LeFever, who really helped that program become what it was. And then LeFever left, and Enos took over. The program took a little bit of a nosedive, but seemed to be back on the upward swing a little bit. There are, a lot of local players on that team. Mike Repose from Lansing Catholic is a lineman on that team. You've got Sailor LaValle, the running back, the freshman running back, who's made quite an impression on Dan Enos and has gotten a lot of playing time this year. He is playing running back for Central Michigan. And then you've got a couple quarterbacks there as well. Alex Niznak, the Ithaca grad, who is playing in a backup role. And, of course, Cooper Rush from Lansing Catholic, who redshirted this year and will look to hone his skills and get himself a little bit more playing time in the seasons to come. We mentioned the Johnny Adams injury, and that's something for me that could become a big deal in this game for Michigan State and the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl, is that if you don't have those defensive backs who are 100% and the way that TCU likes to spread you out, and then they've got a mobile quarterback as well, you know, that's it's going to be a big challenge for Michigan State. And talking to players like William Golston before the team left for the bowl game, you know, somebody asked, you know, you guys have had some success about mobile quarterbacks here this season. And, you know, are you looking forward to facing another one? And he laughed. He said, no way. He said, I like those guys who sit back in the pocket and are able to just, we're able to kind of work around them. But you get guys who are mobile, like they're going to face against TCU, and that makes things a lot more difficult for defensive linemen and linebackers and defensive backs as well. You know, that's the one thing that this Michigan State football program has had all season long, is that they've been so good defensively. And with the offense struggling like they have, that it's been tough, tougher on the defense to kind of keep things going. But that's what they've had to do. They've had to find a way to keep this team in games and then let the offense hopefully make a play when they could. But, again, and we mentioned this with Graham earlier, is the fact of trying to get a win here in this final game and end their season on a winning note, because not only does it, you know, look better on the program, and again, if you finish the year with a 6-7 record, you know, that can sometimes be used against you in recruiting in a negative way, and I'm sure that's what would happen with Michigan State, is, you know, kind of look at where this program is headed. But a 7-6 record, a winning record, can go a long way in recruiting, and also, you know, as we touched upon, you know, going into the next year. And that was a big thing, is that, you know, when Michigan State finally beat Georgia last year to win that bowl game, the first one under Mark D'Antonio, is how that would give this team a springboard into the 2012 season. And it did do that early on. I don't think, you know, at 2-0, anybody expected this team to finish 6-6. You know, the game at Iowa, still against Iowa here, still leaves me scratching my head. I mean, that game was on the Big Ten Network the other night, and when I watched that back, you know, all the offense had to do was make one play. And there were so many games like that during the year when you could look either offensively or defensively, when, you know, the defense needed to maybe make one stop in order to win a game late, and they just weren't able to, or one instance where the offense needed to get one first down or two first downs and just make one play to keep a drive alive and keep the ball away from the opposition, and they just weren't able to do that. So, you know, lessons learned about how to close out football games, I think, is one of the big things that Michigan State will take from this 2012 football season, and They will put those to good use in 2013. And again, if you look at the schedule, it's obviously much easier. You don't have to face the likes Ohio State and Wisconsin and Penn State next year, and having those three teams off the schedule will certainly go a long way toward Michigan State having a much better record next season than they did this year. It's 1:36 here on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Jeremy Sampson from WILX-TV and for Earl Robinson today. And you can join us here on Sports Talk by dialing 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR. Or you can reach us toll-free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. I know tickets was a big issue for Michigan State fans and looking to go out to watch Michigan State in this Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. And, you know, being able, the university to sell enough tickets, you know, before the team left, the university was at just shy or just at 2,000 tickets sold. And, of course, they have an 11,000 ticket allotment. So I know that the university was going to work very hard with a lot of their West Coast alumni to try and get them to that game and, of course, take a little bit of that burden off the university, off the athletic department. But that's one of the things that leaves you scratching your head about this bowl system. And I think one of the reasons that there will be some sweeping reform here with the bowl system is just to try and figure out what can be done to help, you know, some of these universities, some of these athletic departments, because when you're forced to buy, you know, 9,000 tickets that you're not going to use, you know, that's certainly pretty difficult. And that's something that Michigan State is going through right now. And that's something that they're going to have to clearly deal with over the next, you know, couple months here and looking to try and get some people there. You know, certainly unable to sell a lot of those tickets to people around here. And, you know, because of the plane flights and some of the other things that the university has to incur. All right, let's go out to line one and visit with Todd, who's joining us today. Hi, Todd, how are you?
Good afternoon, sir.
What's happening with you today? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to you. You kind of brought up something that I wasn't ready. I don't feel sorry, and I'm a big Michigan State, I don't feel sorry for any of these universities getting stuck with tickets. They don't have a problem raising my tickets. They don't have a problem with PSLs. I mean, you know, I know that's not a popular opinion, and I'm sure you could have Mark Hollis and other athletic officials come on here and tell me that I shouldn't, but I know where they'll get their money. They'll get it out of my pocket. I mean, that's where they'll go first. They'll figure out a way whenever a university wants to, and I'm not just picking on Michigan State, but any other big-time athletic program, they know that they have us. You know, if you're a loyal fan or you're a graduate, you're going to have that allegiance. It's always going to be special to you, and you may cut back or get priced out of certain things. But these universities don't have any compassion for me. They don't give me any money back when the team doesn't perform. So, you know, am I proud that Michigan State was not able to sell out their allotment of tickets through the bowl or through the school? No, I wish they would have been able to, but I also probably am smart enough to realize that if they were playing in the Rose Bowl, they probably wouldn't have enough tickets. Don't you agree?
Well, there's no question about that.
Well, yeah. So, I understand your job, but I don't feel sorry for any of them because, I mean, we know where they'll go. We know where they'll make up the difference, right?
Well, we do, but it's a bad system. And yes, a lot of times some of that, you know, cost gets deferred to, you know, the fans and those kind of things. But, you know, what kind of system are we dealing with here when, you know, because, you know, you have to have a certain allotment and Michigan, you know, East Lansing is a couple thousand miles away from, you know, Phoenix and where they're playing in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. It's, you know, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And this is not the only scenario that we have right now. And so that's why I think there's going to be some sweeping reform. Now, you know, your comment about the cost being added on to you, I mean, that's part of college athletics. I mean, that's, and to me, at some point, Todd, there's going to be that ceiling. There's going to be the housing market crumble in college athletics. It has to happen because the salaries for the coaches and, you know, again, what the fans are paying for, there will come a limit to the amount that people will pay to go to these games. And eventually, and I'm not saying it's going to be next month or next year, but eventually I think there'll be something a little bit like the housing market.
And that may be true, but let's be honest. There's always a percentage of people that can always live in as nice a house as they choose to buy, right? I mean, if you're an athletic program that consistently wins and has a large enough fan base, Alabama isn't going to cut Nick Saban's salary anytime soon.
No.
I mean,
but they're playing for the national championship every other year.
But that's my point. What you're going to have is what you have in the housing market as well. I mean, there's always. I mean, and I don't want to pick on this school either. Look at Eastern Michigan, their football program. I like Coach English. I think he's a good man. I think he's done it. He's been as successful there as anybody can be. But why is Eastern Michigan even in the same division or level of football as the University of Alabama? They shouldn't be, right?
There's no doubt. Yep.
Well, so are they willing to go that far? Are they willing to say, you know what? There are probably 30 to 40, maybe 50. Teams, I don't know, that can afford this type of arms race, and you can play, you can have your own league and your own championship, and that's fine if that's what you want to do. And then we're going to have like a middle tier of schools that maybe come close that can do this and then relegate to the third. I mean, it's easy to say they're going to do the bowl system, which I agree with you, I'm not a big fan of it, but do you really think that a system that allows a head football coach to make $2 to $3 million, an athletic director that makes $3 or $4 million, and put 80,000 people in a stadium for a game that maybe half the people or less than half people care for at $75 a pop. You think they're in a big rush to change? I don't.
Well, I think eventually there's going to be. You're right. It may not be a big rush, but eventually. All right, Todd, anything else with you today?
One other thing. My original point. I don't know. Did you get a chance to hear Lomas Brown's comments about his lack of protection and effort for Scott Mitchell when he was the quarterback? Did you hear anything about that over the weekend?
No, that he said he didn't put forth a lot of effort?
He said that while he was playing Green Bay, and I might have the year wrong, 1994, 93, 95, purposely let a defensive end for the Packers come in and get a shot on Scott Mitchell with the purpose of him getting hurt. And he did get hurt and I guess didn't finish the rest of the season. I know Lomas Brown is a local media member and has been on ESPN and has done some things, and good for him. He was never my favorite Lions player, but that's irrelevant. But he has obviously done well enough for himself to get a gig on ESPN. But, that to me is unacceptable on so many levels.
No,
it really is. And I don't know, hopefully you get an opportunity to hear more about this story. And obviously when you put 50, 80, 5 people in a room, they're all not going to get along. They're all not going to be friends. But when you let some of your personal feelings or your contempt for their abilities, and maybe they're not as good as you think they are, whatever, and then you go out and give less than your full effort, to me that's deplorable. And again, I think anybody that you were to ask in this area, Scott Mitchell will not be remembered fondly for both his on-the-field performance and then some of his attitude off of it. But for Lomas Brown to come out and acknowledge this, I think he loses all credibility. I really do. I'm not going to – if this guy can't give 100% out on a football field to protect, his own teammates, why should I take any faith into what he's telling me on a Sunday analysis on ESPN? Thank you very much.
All right, Todd. Good thoughts today. We appreciate the phone call. Don, hang right where you are. We have to take one quick break here, and then you're up next. But we invite you to stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on WKAR AM 870.
'Tis the season for charitable giving, but how do donors figure out where to give, and how do charities prove that money is actually achieving its aim? I'm Jennifer Ludden, the rise of results-oriented philanthropy, plus how loss can change the holidays. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
All right, that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKAR Radio.
We're under a winter weather advisory until 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. Windy conditions today with snow accumulating 1 to 2 inches, a high around 30. Snow is likely tonight, an accumulation of an inch or less, lows in the lower 20s. And then for Thursday, a mostly cloudy day with highs in the upper 20s. This is Kevin Lavery.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on AM 870 WKAR. Jeremy Sampson from WILX-TV and for Earl Robinson today. And we will be with you here for another 14 minutes or so, right up until 2 o'clock. You can reach us today at 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR. Or toll free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. We'll get into that Lomas Brown comment here in just a little bit, but we want to go back out to the phone lines right now and welcome in Don, who's listening this afternoon in DeWitt. Hi, Don. How are you?
Real good, Jeremy. Thank you. I hope you had a great Christmas.
Thank you, sir. I did. Hope you did, too.
Absolutely. And I'd like to get a shout-out for one of your rookie producers there at WILX, Max Yeiter. He's a great kid, and we'll work hard and do a good job.
But, yeah, Max, we're putting him through the paces right now, so and he's still standing, so that's a good sign.
He's got those graveyard shifts and everything, and he's hanging tough. And, I know if he works hard and does it right, he'll get a shot.
Yeah, what else is going on with you?
Well, you know, I want to comment. I do want to get to Lomas Brown, but I want to comment on some of what Todd's saying. You know, as far as the bowl tickets, part of the problem with schools selling their allotment is the fact that with the Internet, fans have gotten savvy enough to realize the tickets that are assigned to the schools are usually crap tickets. And fans have realized they can get a better ticket at a better deal through StubHub or whomever, any number of Internet sites. And that's the thing that's hurting bowl sales. But then, too, a 6-6 year that a lot of people consider a disappointment, and rather it being in Florida, which, you know, you can plausibly drive, airfare out to Arizona is pretty high.
I mean, there's no doubt. And you bring up a good point about the tickets, too. And that's part of, I think, where some of this bowl reform is going to come to. Because, you know, if you're a school and, you know, you're asking your fans to come out, spend some money, especially like a bowl game where this one, where Michigan State fans would have to travel thousands of miles to get there, and then you put them in the end zones or in the corner, you know, that's, and I understand with these bowl games, you have some corporate seats and some things that have to be done as far as that's concerned. But you're right. Savvy fans have found a way to sit in better seats than they would if they were just, you know, buying them through the school. And I think that's all part of the, I mean, when I say reform, I don't mean that we need to just, you know, rip the whole thing apart, but I think there needs to be something done where, you know, you're at least getting tickets, but, you know, from the 30 to the end zone or whatever, you're not sitting in the end zone or on the corner.
Exactly. If they expect the schools to sell an allotment of tickets, at least give them the break of giving them good seats. I mean, I don't know what they'd expect otherwise. But, no, Todd was complaining about the cost, the high cost, and, you know, everybody can appreciate that. But I my seat, I had to pay an extra $100 per seat for a seat license this year. And, you know, even though it's a bite, you know, if you're buying season tickets, including the cost of that seat license, my tickets come out to be $58 a game. And they're good tickets. You think about it, that's less than 18 in a cart on any good golf course that a lot of people don't bat an eye about playing every weekend all summer. It's just all relative to what you value. And in that regard, as far as MSU's own circumstance, the football program doesn't, unlike a lot of programs, and this is where I get a cackle out of people who talk about, oh, the coach's salary increase, so they've got to raise tuition. The athletic department is a standalone enterprise. They pay all their own bills through donations, ticket sales, TV revenue, et al. One disadvantage that MSU has, they don't get the parking and concession revenue for the football program. And that's, as I say, the football program pays the university for the cost of scholarship athletes, including they don't get a break for out-of-state kids either. They just pay that rate. So the university's benefiting that way. Parking and concession revenue, and for football Saturdays, $15 a car, and all the concession, that's substantial. But anyway, you know, what my point is, the nuclear powers like Alabama and everybody like that will always have an advantage because of, and the bottom line here is Title 19. Basketball and football pay the freight for the entire athletic department. Hockey at best breaks even.
On a good year, for sure. All right, Don, we got a couple other callers I want to try and sneak in, but I appreciate the phone call today, sir. All right, let's go out to Jody, who's on line one, and he had a couple comments on our ticket discussion. Hi, Jody, how are you?
Yeah, how you doing? One thing we got to realize, too, is that there are too many bowl games, and we're rewarding 66 teams with bowls. Let's keep it real.
Yeah, they're majority of them, the majority of these games are with, you look at their 7-5 or 6-6 teams.
Yeah, and, you know, as you look at it, I mean, you know, I played in 75, and we were 7-4. We stayed home.
Yeah.
There were no bowls offered to us at 7-4. You know, nowadays you'd be on New Year's Day. There weren't all these bowls. There were maybe 7 bowls total, and one team from the Big Ten went to a bowl, not 8 or 9. So as you look at it, you know, the way it's changed and the advent of all the bowls and everybody feeling good and giving, you know what I mean, and it's a recruiting tool, whatever, you know, all that, you know, you're rewarding mediocrity. And the question is, no offense to the kids and the coaching staff because it was breaks and, you know, we can go through all that. But at the end of the day, you were 6-6. And do you think fans are going to pay money to fly to Tempe to buy tickets and do all that stuff? You're talking a real diehard fan doing that. Alabama has it because they have no pro game.
Well,
there's no pro sport in Alabama.
Right. Well, and that's the big thing is that you look at, you know, a team with a 10-2 record being a lot different than going to watch one that's 6-6. The interest, the fan interest in a 6-6 team is just not there for any of these bowl games, whether it's Michigan State, Michigan, whomever.
Right.
It's just not there.
You know, it sounds great, and, you know, we, you know, throw our green on our hats and everybody, you know, but in most cases, fans are wagon jumpers. And when it comes, because I remember back in 76 losing to Northwestern, who had won 25 games in a row and lost 25 in a row, and one person met us at the airport when we flew back in. One person, Mr. Poe, I guess the guy that set the alarm off every once the fire, you know, the tornado alarm. He was the only guy that came out to support us.
Remember those good old days when people used to come out to the airport and welcome the team back? I remember those days.
Yeah, you know, I'm just saying, but, you know, nobody cared. You know, I mean, we were a laughingstock. You know, 2 years later, we won the Big Ten. But like I said, it was only, you know, there weren't all these bowls for 6-6 teams. That's it right there.
Well, I don't actually mind there being games for those teams. I mean, again, this is all about money. Let's cut right to the chase. And there is money to be made there for the bowls that put this on. They get these big sponsorships from, you know, in this case, Buffalo Wild Wings. There are some charities that accept some money and, you know, do get some benefit from these games. So there is some good that comes out of it. The bad is when you try it, to me, is you're sticking an athletic department with 11,000 tickets, knowing that there's no way they're ever going to be able to sell that many. That's, to me, just, you know, a bit unfair. But that's the system as it is right now. I know.
Just decline a bowl invitation and stay home. That's the other option. All right, man. Happy New Year.
Thanks, Jody. Happy New Year to you. Appreciate the phone call today. Time flies. We got a lot of calls coming in today. In fact, let's go back out to the phone line right now and welcome in Kirk, who's on line 3. He's joining us this afternoon in Grand Ledge. Hi, Kirk. How are you?
Just fine, Jeremy.
What's happening with you today?
I'm enjoying the discussion of the last 15 minutes because I haven't been able to listen to the first part of the show.
Okay.
And what Jody just said kind of segues into my idea. This is my idea for bowl reform.
Okay.
Okay, and first I need you to answer me a couple questions.
All right, I'll try.
Okay. Explain to me how it benefits a Michigan State University who's 6-6 or whatever to go to a bowl game when it's going to cost them money, huge money to go to this game, because the end result is, and you've seen studies and stuff before where it's like basically the top 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 bowl games, mm-hmm. those teams get a financial kickback on, the rest of the teams lose money.
Well, there's a couple things. The first thing is for the team is practice time. Okay, you've got 15 extra practices that you get to go, and you get to play another game. So that's experience that's invaluable that you wouldn't otherwise get. You're right. The monetary deal, you take a little bit of a hit, but it also looks good in recruiting when you can go into a young man's house and you can say, if you're Mark D'Antonio, you can say, in my 6 seasons here, we've gone to a bowl game each and every year. And that sells kids on coming to play for you. So that's just a couple things. There's a lot more, but you know that's okay. A couple.
And you've hit exactly on the one I want to talk about, and that's the extra practice time.
Okay.
Okay? So here's my idea on bowl reform. Everybody in the NCAA Division I gets an extra 2 weeks of practice. They can do it in January or February. Okay, before their spring practice, it's a developmental period. Everybody gets that whether you go to a bowl or not. Everybody gets this extra practice time, and then you know what would happen? Here's how it would be bowl reform. Teams would say, no, thank you. It's going to cost us $250,000, $500,000 to go to your game? No, thank you. We'll take the practice time in January or February, and you would see a shrinkage of the number of bowls that you have, and you'd see a better product.
And that could be true, but I think there's also a way to – I think what you're going to see is the bowl reform that we're talking about maybe become a lot more regionalized. I mean, if you've been to Indianapolis like I've had the chance to for mm-hmm. a regional, a Final Four, the Big Ten Championship game last year, that's a great place to hold a bowl game. Why isn't there a bowl game in Indianapolis? Well, there's not a bowl game in Indianapolis because of the weather, because the weather's not great. And I understand that, but monetarily – I think that there could be a huge success of a bowl game in Indianapolis. It's a great city to hold it. The hotels, restaurants, everything is within walking distance. You've got all kinds of things going on in that downtown. It would be a great spot for the Big Ten to have a game with. Maybe it's somebody from the Big East or, you know, where, you know, maybe the MAC or another conference that's regionally fits with, you know, the Midwest, that you could have somebody, maybe even an SEC team come up and play. You know, there's ways that you can do that.
Well, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. I just think there are way too many bowls in the first place, because in at least 25% of the bowls out there, if you watch them, there's not going to be 50% attendance in them. To start with, I'm not sure what the sponsors are buying in terms of sponsoring all these things. You're right. There's big money there for the bowl people that are making huge money or whatever by getting these sponsorships or whatever, but there's not money there for anybody else, and the system just boggles my mind. I guess somebody in the NCAA must be lining their pockets to maintain the system, but to me it needs to be shrunk if they're going to keep the bowl system. Thanks, Jeremy.
All right.
You got to go.
All Bye. Right, Kirk. Excellent thoughts today, an excellent call. I did not know, Aaron, that the college football bowl reform would be such a hot-button topic today, but that's kind of the way the show went today. We were going to get into a little bit of Michigan State basketball, but we had so many calls today, we just didn't get a chance to do that. Of course, Michigan State, we can tell you, will begin their Big Ten season coming up on New Year's Eve in Minneapolis against a very good Minnesota team. I want to thank Graham Couch from the Lansing State Journal for joining us today from Tempe as he's following the Michigan State football team. Of course, they're getting ready to take on TCU this Saturday night in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. ESPN will have coverage of that game kickoff at a little after 10:15, so make sure you get a little bit of rest on that day. We thank all our callers for calling in today and joining us this afternoon and making this a very enjoyable program. We hope that you have a great new year, everybody. We'll have to see if Earl will be back tomorrow, but we thank you again for listening. From Michigan State University, this is AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.